Gerhardt's back.
The more things change, the more they stay the same.
From NJ1015.com, this is the new Jim Gerhardt Podcast.
And again, I'm Jim Gerhardt, a superannuated morning radio announcer, along with Patrick Lavery, a gainfully employed news executive here at New Jersey 101.5. Pat, when I came in this morning by the studio,
yeah,
I saw Bill Spadia. Mm-hmm. He was... It was deja vu all over again because he was trying to convince people that they're getting screwed royally with their taxes in New Jersey, which is true. And Bill's doing a great job of it. Mm-hmm. So he picked up the mantle. It's like you're running a relay. He picked and he's just charging in there toward the finish line. But what I thought of, because I did the same thing.
You're right.
And there was very little response. And so I used to have this vision when I came in the mornings to do the morning show, and mostly we dealt in that kind of thing, just New Jersey affairs, politics, life in New Jersey.
Yeah.
And one of the terrible things are taxes, the property taxes, which are horrible, you know, atrocities. But I had this vision that I'd come in every morning at 3:30. Mm-hmm. On my desk, there would be a rutabaga, you know, a giant turnip.
Yeah.
And I'd have 4 hours to convince it had a soul. Bill's got the rutabaga now, I think. But here, you know, you would think with the taxes.
Yeah.
And perhaps I'm getting a little more vehement about this, having, you know, been off the workforce for a while. Mm-hmm. And the property taxes are still coming in. They're still going up. And it hurts. It really hurts. Every time you turn around, having paid for the house, you don't have it taken out of a mortgage. So you see it, big, huge letters.
Sure.
And they're... And so it's become increasingly aware of that. And you would think the people of New Jersey, heaven knows enough of us have told them, the people of New Jersey would be up in arms. The people of New Jersey.
I'm not a soul. How am I going to take this anymore? I'm not a soul. I'm not going to take it anymore.
I'm not going to take this anymore. We can stop it, and you can do it. You can do it.
However,
and the people of New Jersey always responded. Yeah.
Well,
there's the sheeple.
You know, here is the thing, and we've talked about this before, just the apathy that has grown over the years among New Jersey residents and taxpayers and voters. And you did a great job railing against it for all those many years. And
Bill has even kicked it up a level. He does a great job of it.
And I have to think, you know, for every problem that you have, every problem, there exists a solution. You'd like to believe that. So there has to be a solution to this. And when you have a solution to something and it's not getting solved, the people that are in charge of that solution, I think, either don't know what the solution is or don't care. And I think by this point, we have enough evidence to say, yeah, the politicians probably know what the solution is. They just don't care.
Well, they don't want to do it. They
right.
don't want my theory. Well, of course, I've told my theory so many times. Mm. The state, according to the Constitution, is supposed to provide this thorough and efficient system of education. The state,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
not me,
right.
not my neighbors.
Right.
And so they turn to property taxes. But the thing is, if the state picked it up, the cost of education,
yeah.
then this would be a huge part of the budget. A huge part of the
yes,
budget.
No doubt.
And that would mean that less money for the members of the blob, the political establishment, mm-hmm. to spend on buying votes.
Right.
That's my conspiracy theory.
I don't think that's much of a conspiracy theory at all. I think that's kind of in broad daylight.
You know, I mentioned it so many times. John Wisniewski, the Democratic assemblyman who was running for the nomination for governor,
yes.
didn't make it, unfortunately, I think, because he's a good man. As part of his campaign, he kept saying the state should be doing this. Nobody paid any attention to him.
Right.
They don't want it. Now, of course, the solution, and you can see if anybody can see this on my hat, it says
right.
GRIP, G-R-I-P. G-R-I-P stands for Get Rid of Incumbent Politicians.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the only way that I can see to solve this is to go and vote against any incumbent. Now, I'll grant you, people say, well, what difference does it make? They'll throw in a clown from the other party who do the same thing. Yes, but every 2 years you get a chance to do it again, sooner
That's right.
or later.
That's right.
And as my idol, H.L. Mencken, once said, Even a United States senator, if filled repeatedly with a bung starter, would eventually get up and use his head. Anyway, I congratulate Bill on keeping the flame going here.
Yeah.
But I don't know where it goes. We had I guess last week we kind of hit a little bit of a hornet's nest talking about the Carton affair.
Yeah.
And probably it would be appropriate to do a little bit of a follow-up on this.
I think so.
Because we were waiting for the other shoe to drop last week.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the shoe dropped. There was a sentence
by
the judge, which really surprised me.
Right.
And I think it surprised a lot of people. And in spite of this tsunami of public relations campaign to prove what a wonderful person he is.
Right.
And that should not be punished. And I thought it was kind of interesting. At least so I read. Now, I was not there. But his statement before the judge, before the sentencing, when everybody sort of anticipated the judge's heart was going to melt with all of these stories, this abuse and the addiction, psychological problems and everything. And what a wonderful man who got caught in a trap that's Satan's fault or so, you know, the whole business. But she didn't. But his statement was that, and I can't imagine the gall of saying this to a judge who's about to sentence you. Like putting me in jail will not serve any purpose. Who thinks it is?
Well,
but he said it would simply be taking me, in effect, taking me out of the picture. Well, yes.
Well,
but in his mind, without him, the picture does not exist.
Right.
And so, if you take me out of everything, the world will collapse.
Or
how can this, well, that's exaggeration, of course, but how can this go on? I don't think it ever dawned on him, and in a sense, I feel a little sorry for him here. I don't think it ever dawned on him that he had done anything wrong.
Right.
Because he did it.
Right.
Therefore, it was powers, numinous powers beyond his control. And because something happened when he was young, he naturally turned to an addiction to overcome the pain. And that was sort of the process that he was saying. But again, I was surprised. Now, the sentence, the 3.5 years?
Yeah, 42 months.
42 months.
Right.
My first thought was, all right, he'll be out in about 8 months. He'll go to a country club prison.
Right.
Which he probably will.
Yeah, I don't think that
yet. Do you remember these prisons? What happens, a man named Charles Kushner, who was the father of the United States president's daughter.
Right.
Jared Kushner.
Right.
His father, Charles Kushner, was prosecuted energetically, enthusiastically by none other than Christopher J. Christie,
yes,
when he was a U.S. attorney.
Yes.
Mr. Kushner went to jail. Mm-hmm. Now, according to the story, Mr. Kushner went to a federal facility. This was a very wealthy man, a man of considerable wealth and influence and importance in the state, but nevertheless, he got convicted and had to do some time. He went to this prison, I think it was in Alabama. He had a job.
Okay.
Everybody there had a job. His job was to get up in the morning, go out, take a look at the golf course, and be sure that the sprinklers were working.
On the golf course at the prison.
Something is going to happen. Now, I have to make an intuitive prediction between now and the time to report for the incarceration, which is in July.
Right.
I thought that was rather strange, but I guess that's the way they do business.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't really know how that works, the kind of lag time between the sentencing and when you actually have to begin using your serving your sentence.
Possibly to give time for appeals. I don't know. But
that would make sense.
They're not going to throw in the towel because I don't think the man can.
Right.
This is a great injustice in his view. So, but, you know, again, just an afterthought, a little stream of consciousness stuff. When I was talking about his career here and how that had such a very chilling, almost often effect on the people who worked at the station.
Yeah.
I only talked about my experience and some of the people at the station.
Yes.
But there were others and horrible things that happened. Well, okay, I opened the can of worms. I tried to keep people out of it because they have their own notion of it. But there was a statement made in a story, I believe it was in one of the New York newspapers, a columnist was writing about him before the sentencing.
Right.
And he said that Carton's act was, and I quote here, profane put-down artistry, defamations, toilet humor, adolescent sexual cracks. He cut people up for fun and occasionally tossed in some charity work. But the cutting of people up,
right,
I think, is very revealing because that's exactly what he did. You referred to this malicious activity that he did. But he cut up some excellent people in New Jersey and got away with it.
Mm-hmm.
One of them was the wife, a lady that I admired tremendously, of a higher-ranking politician.
Mm.
And she was a very courageous lady who she and her husband were had a great interest in mental health. And she was telling in an interview of some sort or in an article about how she had postpartum depression, which everybody knows about now.
Yes.
And some of the ideas, these terrible ideas that float through your head of people who are afflicted with that. Well, he picked up on that. Carton picked up on that and just cut. I think the word cutting that this columnist used is very accurate, cutting her down. I resented that because as a person I had a tremendous amount of respect for.
Sure.
But her husband wasn't too happy with it either.
Right.
And so he came down to the station. He was going to do a program with Eric that night, and this Carton was getting off the air. And the political person, who's a big man, I don't doubt that he's a strong man, and he was a little bit more than cross. His idea was to take him out in the parking lot and wipe up the parking lot with him. He could challenge him out.
Like we do in New Jersey.
He had a state police security detail that prevented that.
I remember hearing a story when I first began here from a producer who had been working here for several years, no longer does. We have remained friends. But he said, it was when I started to work here, and it was about the power of making first impressions. And he said on his first day here, Carton was still here, and one of our news reporters at the time, a person who also no longer works here, was around the station for whatever reason. He wasn't out in the field. And the news reporter was known in some circles as not the nicest person himself, so maybe he had it coming. But this producer, on his first day, saw Carton grab the news reporter by the collars of his shirt and push him up against a wall in one of the hallways out here.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the kind of person we were dealing
with.
There
were a number of events.
Yeah.
I think Eric Fromm, the great psychiatrist, one of the great intellects of the last century, had written one time about people like that. And he said, the lust for power, and this is purely showing power.
Sure.
And that I'm bigger than you are, I'm greater than you are. Mm. And Eric Fromm said, the lust for power rests not in strength, but rather in weakness.
Mm.
And if you stop and think about it, this is true, because somebody is just desperately trying to overcome the fact that they feel the size of a flaxseed somewhere down inside themselves. But there were other things. Yeah. There was a state senator that he used horribly demeaning ethnic and other epithets toward. There was, I think at one time he decided that he didn't like the New Jersey State Police. that got into an uproar.
Yeah.
The New Jersey State Legislature, and I don't remember all the mechanics of this because I was trying best as I could to keep out of it, actually went on, they met to pass a resolution condemning him. You got to go pretty far for that.
You know, I was thinking about what you said about his comments that removing him would not solve any problems or anything like that.
Puts the sun out.
Have you ever seen the cartoon show Family Guy?
Oh, yeah.
There's an early episode of that show where they're in a courtroom, and the judge, who is the same stock judge that they use for every courtroom scene, says, if I could, I would put you in a place where you were removed from society for a predetermined length of time based on the nature and severity of your crime.
Yeah.
However, as I know, no such place exists, so you're free to go. And he bangs the gavel, and the guy on trial says, wait, don't you mean prison? And he says, I already banged the gavel.
Something is going to happen. Yeah. There's something going on. Because they're never going to let up with this public relations campaign. Okay, so I have no idea. You know, you talk to people.
Yeah.
And people are, I guess the big question is that just, it almost has to be. I mean, there's no way he was going to, the federal government wanted, 5 to 7 years.
Right.
there was almost no way they were going to do that because it is a nonviolent crime.
Yes, but
and his violence was all done with his tongue. I mean, it wasn't a physical.
But I think, as in this case of the college admissions and the celebrity mothers trying to get their daughters into college, I do think in these federal cases with high profile people, those who prosecute and those who sentence do want to make an example. And so while it was never going to be 5 to 7 years, I think that there definitely was, I won't say an agenda, but I think there was the goal of saying, well, let's not let him off for 8 months. Let's you know, kind of come down from what the guidelines say a little bit, but harsh enough that he will
get
be.
Get your attention.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, you know, another thing, just switching gears for just a second here. The business, well, you're talking about not necessarily a crime at this point, the Me Too situation in this country. Mm-hmm. And Senator Biden, or former Vice President Biden,
yes,
who is accused now of being feely touchy. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting how even former President Obama had noticed that all the far left are jumping on him. They're trying to knock him out of the nomination picture.
Right.
Because he is the only moderate. Right. Who's likely could draw a moderate kind of a vote in the presidential election. And the others are way off the scale somewhere. Mm. So I think it's sort of a political cannibalism now.
I was going to say the exact same thing, and that the left has to stop cannibalizing themselves and each other. Mm-hmm. Who is this... who is the mayor? And I always get the pronunciation of his name wrong. But he's a fairly young guy,
from
Indiana, right?
I don't know the name.
And he's running, and he's gay. He's openly gay, yeah. And he's brought his husband to many of these events. And I started seeing articles pop up last week to the effect of, you know, the Democrats need to accept that. Yes, he's gay enough for them. Like they always want. Well, no matter how good a candidate may be, they always want more from them.
Well, it's like the Cory Booker, who was once accused of not being black enough to be mayor of Newark by Sheriff James.
Yeah, right, right.
Yeah. Oh, and ethnic.
Now that you mention mayor of Newark, there was a former mayor of Newark who passed within the last
Charles
week.
Charles Gibson.
Right, right. And he, after his mayorship was done, and this was decades after, he also got into some legal trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And I was reading about him online, and it's very funny how the internet can do things like this. The quote that he gave to a reporter after he served his sentence or whatever was, you know, history will remember me as a good mayor. They won't remember the names of the people who prosecuted me. And the link to those last couple of words, the people who prosecuted me, brought you to a page for Chris Christie. Because he was on case.
He was in it.
You know, so the irony of that.
I was talking about the business with Biden. Mm-hmm. Now, so I had to wonder, why is it that in most of these cases now, this happened some time ago, this alleged abuse or indiscretion. Mm-hmm. Why do you wait 5 or 10 years to tell about it? Why didn't you do it at the time?
Right.
Now, then it occurred to me, well, I think there's an excellent reason in this case going on in New Jersey now. The lady who's claimed that she was raped by the appointee.
Oh, right. Alvarez.
So, again, what this says is it's a hell of a risk to tell somebody about it now.
Sure.
Because you're not going to be believed. You have to go through a hell of your own.
Yeah.
And 5, 10 years ago, it would have been worse.
And
so I can kind of understand now the reason that people would, rather than have to go through all that, but then now... that the dam has burst.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with a Senator Robert Packwood? Did the name ring a bell?
No,
from Oregon?
No.
A few years ago, this has been in the 80s, there was a senator from Oregon named Robert Packwood.
Okay.
His nickname was Kissin' Bob. Because Senator Packwood would grab ladies, you know, and kiss them. He didn't do anything else.
Right.
But he was kissing. Well, this got to be some kind of an issue. Even in those days, 30 years ago, this was a Me Too thing, and all of these congressional lady aides or employees were telling these stories about it. And so they had a censorship process in Congress to assess this. He was censured, And I believe he may have been dropped from Congress because he was certainly out of the picture. Mm-hmm. Now, here's the United States. It shows you how the system works. United States Senator.
Right.
He is, in a sense, disassembled right. because he kissed a few people, didn't
right.
it? There's no indication that he touched anybody with his fingers or his yeah. toes or anything. He kissed him, and he's out. Now, they had and used in the trial what they call the famous of the time Packwood Diaries. He kept okay. a diary. Everything had happened during the day in his office.
Okay.
And he would actually put in there, oh, today I kissed Mary Jane, and who's a lovely lady. And he
okay.
came along with this. But on the same time, in one of them, he told he kissed somebody. The next thing, he says, I got a visit today from so-and-so who was a lobbyist for a large industry.
Mm-hmm.
I told him, hey, guess who's about to be named to the OSHA committee? Me. Said he immediately whipped out his checkbook and wrote me a check for $12,000. They didn't notice that. That never came up. And there were all kind of entries like this about this legalized bribery that goes
yeah,
on.
Right,
and he
right.
was writing it out. It's in right. You can find a copy of the
totally.
Packwood Diaries. You'll see it in there. Nobody noticed that, but they noticed that he kissed Esmeralda.
A thought occurred to me as we're having this conversation, and I know you'll get the reference. Could you imagine if he was still alive today, if Richard Dawson were to say he was running for president? Not only would there be a history of him kissing women, it would be on videotape on live national television on Family Feud. There would be indisputable video evidence.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, the times, they are changing. Again, you know, kind of switching gears. I have to do this, digress a little bit,
yeah.
talk about times changing.
Mm-hmm.
You perhaps would not remember this. Now, in every totalitarian, draconian government,
mm-hmm.
there is usually a ministry
mm-hmm.
whose very name strikes fear into the hearts of people.
Okay.
You get the KGB
sure.
in Russia,
mm-hmm.
OGPU, or the Okhrana, some of these agencies, these terrible agencies they have.
Right.
Now, if somebody said you have to appear at Lubyanka prison because KGB wants to see you.
Mm-hmm.
It was terror.
Right.
You never, ever come out of that. But in New Jersey, I don't know if people realize it, we once had just such an agency.
Yeah.
It was not the KGB. It was, and I wish I had some dramatic music, it was, da-da, the MVC. Or the DMV.
The
it
DMV,
was called. The DMV.
Then, yeah.
Is such an agency.
Yeah.
But in now here's my point, how things have changed. If you go back, this would be, let's say, 70s, 80s, and a little bit of change in the 90s.
Mm.
These were hell holes to go through if you had to go yeah. through an agency. If you had to go through inspection, God help you, take the week off,
right.
sit behind the school buses and everybody else. But the agencies were just horrible places to go. I once went without renewing my driver's license.
Mm-hmm.
And matter of fact, I was staying with some relatives for a few days in
yeah.
Western Maryland. I got a Maryland license. I wasn't going back in that agency. People
right.
were nasty
yeah.
and they were crowded. They
yeah.
were slow. Every time you got into a line and thought you were getting almost there, the person would get up and go into a back room.
Right.
I don't know what went on in the back room.
Right.
You may have seen that.
Yes.
I'd love to know what they do back then.
Absolutely. And I was actually just having this conversation with my grandmother over the weekend. She said, you know, your grandfather got a notice in the mail. He can renew his license by mail. And she says, I'm 80 years old. I've never driven a car, but I have a non-driving license.
Yeah.
I have a non-driving ID. I have to go to the MVC and wait in line. And I don't even drive.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well,
it's crazy.
This is big. Well, there's certain things that older people.
Yeah.
I shouldn't say. What do I say? Elderly. I hate senior citizen. I don't strangle
right.
anybody. And
right.
old futz. You know,
and elderly mm-hmm. doesn't ring true to me anymore either, because they use elderly for,
well,
you know, 70 and up. And there's certainly, you know.
There's a great Buddhist expression.
Mm-hmm.
Aging is not to be confused with getting old.
Well,
which
see
is a nice thing.
Yeah. I like
but
that.
There was a point somewhere in what I was talking about here.
So,
oh,
yeah.
Oh.
It would go in the back for a sandwich.
Terrible. People will remember. They right. would charge you, what, 50 cents or something to use a pen that didn't write anyway. Kept sending
right.
you to different lines.
Right.
People were just thoroughly nasty to you.
Yeah.
Now, segue to yesterday.
Okay.
yesterday I had to renew my driver's license.
Yeah, okay.
I went to the MVC agency. It's on Route 70 in Medford.
Okay.
And which is in Burlington County.
Mm-hmm.
The nicest people.
Yeah.
I didn't want to leave. They were the nicest, friendliest, kindest, most efficient people. And I didn't believe it. Of course, I've been in them since the old days. The reform started with Whitman.
Right.
You remember she privatized the motor vehicle agency.
Mm-hmm.
That sounded like a great idea. Get it out of the hands of the government drones.
Yeah.
And put it in private. Well, when they did, though, they made the big mistake of setting these up as individual businesses like franchises.
Yes.
And you had to have some political pull to get to be the head of that particular that agency. And then you get into a lot of patronage and a lot of problems, too. So they unprivatized it during the McGreevy administration.
Mm-hmm.
And a lady named Diane McGreedy became the commissioner,
mm-hmm.
and she straightened it out. But since Diane McGreedy's day and the day of that particular governor's day, it has gotten better.
Yeah.
But I've been to them where they're very crowded anyway, and they're mm-hmm. kind of slow, and I've had people walk away to the back room. This one yesterday, you couldn't believe it. It was like you were an honored guest when you came in. And, of course, I have to carry, after driving for 70 years without any problems, I have to carry in documents. I have to get my birth certificate, which was signed by Woodrow Wilson, I think, or maybe before that, and proof of residence and this stuff. But they took a look at it. Okay, go and get in line so-and-so, and they gave me a card with a number on it.
Mm.
So not many people there, so I went over and sit down, and very quickly I get it called up, and they go through the process. They take the picture. And I had this nice chat.
Yeah.
Had a great chat with the lady doing it. But the change of times. I've talked before. I know the inspection thing got dramatically better.
Yes.
After they got through the Parsons fiasco of the 90s.
Right.
And I have mentioned many a time, a great place. Fortunately, I have 5 cars, so I do get to see these people frequently at the inspection station on Route 38. It's in East Hampton Township, again, in Burlington County. Nicest people.
Yeah.
They are friendly. They are good at what they do. They are quick. So again, changing times.
I just imagine a world, and I had much the same experience as you did. I'm coming up on renewing, but the last time I renewed 4 years ago, we had just moved to Flemington, and the MVC is right there down mm-hmm. 202 in Flemington. And it couldn't have been quicker. It was a Saturday morning when you would think it would have been packed. There was nobody there. They got me in. They got me out. It was great. But I imagine a world where the MVC is like the movie Field of Dreams. And when the employees walk into the back, they just walk into the cornfield. Then they walk out of the cornfield. And when they walk out, they look around and they say, "Is this heaven?" "No. It's motor vehicle."
It's something. They morph into something. It's like the science fiction movie with just this great shimmering silver thing. Right. I've often thought this happens to people when they're elected to, especially state legislatures. And
mm-hmm.
they go in. Some very good people go in.
Yeah.
But somehow they walk through this silver shimmering cloud and they become politicians.
Right.
The, what else is going on? The pot thing's still hanging.
Yeah.
And more towns signing up to...
I haven't seen too much development on this in the last week or so since they said that they were not going to take the vote. Now, it very well may come up again in the next month or so, but there was initial hesitation, particularly on the part of Steve Sweeney, the president of the state Senate, if it did not come up for a vote this winter or spring, to table it until after the elections in November. Because as we've talked about, once you get into an election year, once that calendar flips, mm-hmm. everybody's playing for November.
Sure.
So anything controversial on the table that may swing a vote here or there, there's a lot of trepidation about.
Yeah. So that one. Oh, I got to do something. Last week,
mm-hmm.
I think this bespeaks something. Last week,
mm-hmm.
I had lamented the fact that what to me is a very good teacher had mm-hmm. been suspended from his job.
Right.
Because he had told the class, as part of a no doubt a history lecture.
Yeah.
That Hitler was a good leader, but he immediately followed with his character, terrible character who did horrible things.
Mm.
And so everybody jumped on the fact that he was a good leader.
Mm.
Now, you even said, well, you could kind of understand that because goodness. But you see, here this yeah. indicates a certain amount of academic illiteracy.
Mm.
If you look at the sentence, English language, which of course is in... It's right. becoming D-class A anyway.
Yeah.
English language, the adjective good, modified leader, didn't refer to anything else.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The moral part hadn't come up. And so obviously, based on basic English,
mm-hmm.
it was he was a good leader. But everybody said, well, he was a good person. He didn't say he was a good person. But the fact that people would jump at that without thinking.
Right.
There was no relationship, syntactically
right.
speaking, between saying that he was a good leader and the next part, which was damning him as a human being.
Right.
But this is now people lose their jobs yeah, over to, stuff like
to say,
that.
To say good leader and end it there and not connect it to anything else, there's a favorite phrase that if you listen to Phil Murphy long enough, you will hear him say over and over and over again, which is period, full stop.
Uh-huh.
And that's, I feel like, what went on here. Yeah. It was intended to be a period, full stop, and there are people who want to continue the sentence to connect another thought.
I had, you were talking about the DMV people, which would, I guess, get into government workers in general.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought about this. Do you remember George Zoffinger?
No, I don't.
George Zoffinger was essentially a financial man. Back in the early 90s, Governor Jim Florio had made a trip to England, and he ran into George Zoffinger, who was running the Fidelity Bank operations in Europe.
Okay.
George is a very bright young guy.
Okay.
He talked him into coming back and joining his administration as the commissioner of the Department of Commerce.
Okay.
Now, here's a man who had tremendous qualifications, excellent in every way. And I always used to say that if I could somehow become dictator of New Jersey, I would simply appoint George to run the state and I'd just sit back.
Okay.
And applaud. He was that good.
Would you be a good leader as a dictator?
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, heavens no. I hope not. But the thing that George took the job, he came back, he became, now he was used to working as a banker.
Okay.
Now he came into New Jersey, he got up in the morning the first day on the job as the commissioner of the Department of Commerce. He went in at 7 o'clock, sat at his desk, ready to start. Well, he was the only one there. So he decided, well, you know, maybe they're a little late. So 7:30 came. Looked at his watch. Nobody there. 8 o'clock came. And this went on. And finally, people about 9-ish or later came straggling in anytime, sitting around. He wasn't sure what happened. But anyway, he tried to make the most of it. And yet he wasn't really getting anywhere with certain reforms that they wanted. He actually asked the governor for permission to fire or to lay off half of the employees of the New Jersey State Department of Commerce so they could get some work done. And he didn't mean it to be snide. He was looking at it as a professional.
Sure.
Yeah. It says something, but his proportion was a half. He said, if you let me get rid of half of the employees, then we could run an efficient organization. Otherwise, it's very, very difficult. You're probably not going to do it. So.
Well, and I remember hearing the same thing just in documentaries and things like that about Joe Gibbs when he first started coaching the Washington Redskins, that if the players came in and they saw dew on his car, they would know that he had come in at 3:30 or 4 o'clock in the morning and that they should have been there a little bit earlier. But also, they were, you know, the Redskins were kind of a bottom-feeding team when he took over. And within 2 years, he'd redone basically half the roster and they won a Super Bowl. So I can understand the philosophy of someone who wants to come in and change something totally or at least
because
half.
Because the ingrain, the deep state of the state, do not want any changes. They have tuned this, fine-tuned this, meticulously tuned it for the most benefits and advantages for them.
Right.
You know, back when we used to talk about it, people, they got upset with me, state workers. We were sort of disparaging state workforce, which people do. Because everybody at some time or another has had contact with some government official who was a real sphincter.
Sure.
Put it that way. The information that I got that was most damning came from state workers. Because
really?
Somebody's doing it. Somebody's doing the job. And that's their big complaint. The people who are working about the ones who aren't. The ones who are sitting there running, you know, eBay businesses in a cubicle on the side.
Right.
And this sort of thing. So so it goes. I got just a couple more things.
Sure.
This is just two stories. And I thought they were rather interesting. I was going to get into it this morning. I have such an ambivalence with technology. Mm-hmm. Much of it I hate. You ever read the Unabomber's Manifesto?
Maybe, yeah.
I found out that I agreed with it. I certainly don't agree with his way he tried to get it published with actually hurting people.
Yeah.
But much of what he said is that technology eventually is going to pretty much destroy life and the country as we know it. And we're getting there now, especially when you get into the artificial intelligence and, you know, where it goes from there.
Sure.
But my thing is, and I hate it, I refuse to participate in YouTube because I don't, or not YouTube, what is it, Facebook?
Facebook,
I don't care who changed their socks and want everybody in the world to know. On the other hand, I had a conversation a couple of nights ago. We started off with a text exchange, which is instant, mind you, and a call from my son, Christian, who is out in the Amazon jungle, north in the middle of nowhere from Iquitos, which is sort of the key to the Amazon in Peru. He's out there in a camp with thatched huts and stuff. He has somebody with some leading tours down there. And we're sitting there talking like you and I are talking.
Yeah.
How can this happen?
Right.
it's absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
But anyway, couple of things here unrelated. I got some good stories about that, too. You see, if you're young, this is just commonplace. You see, what's the problem? But if you're not, it is astounding.
It can be eye-opening, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm still afraid when I turn a computer on, I'm going to make it mad. By doing something wrong. Now here, okay, sign of the times. We'll sort of end with a sign of the times.
Okay.
A new app helps President Trump supporters find restaurants where they will be safe. You know, the left goon squads, of course, are accosting people in restaurants.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, you've seen some of those.
Yeah.
The app, it's called 63rd Safe, rates businesses as either safe or not safe, based on such criteria as whether they post political content on social media, that makes them not safe, whether customers are allowed to carry guns. Developer Scott Wallace says the app is needed due to the rise of the socialist goon squad.
The socialist goon squad.
So if you want to go on an app and you can find out what restaurant you can go to where you're not likely to be accosted, as some people, pretty responsible people in government have been, because these squads are out there.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, and another thing now, technology, robotics. One more story.
Yeah.
A California hospital has apologized for sending a robot to tell a man he was dying. Now deceased, Ernest Quintana, 78, was at the Kaiser Medical Center when a robot rolled into his room, and a doctor on the robot's video screen informed him that he only had a few hours to live.
Oh, my goodness.
News of such gravity, said the daughter of the man, should be delivered by a human being. You aren't going to die in 3 hours.
Right. But can
sit
you...
Sit down, bend over, kiss your, you know, goodbye.
Can you imagine now if it was, say, an automated phone call that he took in his room? If you would like more details about your impending death, press 1.
Yeah. All of our doctors are busy now,
assisting
other patients. And the one that gets me, and I want to scream, is your call is very important to us.
Nothing could be further from the truth.
Answer the damn phone if it's important to you. All right, so we'll put sort of the cap on this one, I think.
Yeah.
Again, well, we'll try again next week to see can we get this big thing off the ground. I'm Jim Gearhart, along with Patrick Lavery. Pat, you thank you.
Thank you
so much.
Thanks for listening to the new Jim Gearhart podcast.
Still cooking, and it's bigger than ever.
From NJ1015.com.